Hi, everyone. This is Greg Fink. I'm president and CEO of ACG Wealth. And today's podcast, we are going to be talking about smart beta. Is this just a buzzword, or is this a trend that's here in the ETF marketplace? Smart beta. It seems this type of investing has become an investment term of the day. Not really sure. However, to help me with all of this investment and or industry jargon is a pioneer on the subject. Jeremy Schwartz is with me today. He is director of research at WisdomTree. Jeremy is responsible for WisdomTree equity index construction and oversees research across the whole WisdomTree family. Prior to joining WisdomTree, Jeremy was Professor Jeremy Siegel's head of research and has assisted with and co-authored a number of industry-related books and papers such as Stocks for the Long Run and What Happened to the Original Stocks in the S&P 500. Welcome to the podcast, Jeremy. We're very excited to have you here.
Greg, it's a pleasure. Looking forward to our conversation.
Wonderful. So let's dive right in. Let's just start with the basic. What does smart beta actually mean?
No, it's an interesting word, and it's a phrase that has caught a lot of people. They either love it, they hate it. We at WisdomTree, we were pioneers of an approach that we actually call modern alpha. And I like modern alpha a little bit better than smart beta in the sense that it I think describes what we're trying to accomplish through our factor and investment approach, where a lot of these smart betas became, well, the S&P 500, the Russell 3000, they're all market cap weighting. And there was all these different investment strategies that are trying to beat the index. And so smart beta, you could say, well, is beta dumb? Is that the implication that beta is dumb? No, indexing has done very, very well. And a lot of the studies show indexing and ETFs have beaten a lot of the traditional active managers that are at higher fees and less transparent structures that are more tax inefficient. And so beta by itself is actually very smart in itself. So the term smart beta is interesting, but we do believe that modern alpha is a better description for certainly what WisdomTree does, but what a lot of the other approaches that are referred to as smart beta. And a lot of them are just designed to be value added over a traditional market cap index. And so they're the type of factors that people believe over long periods of time will lead to outperformance.
Okay, there's a lot there, and I'm going to come back to factors in a second. Modern alpha, we mentioned smart beta, factor based. Is this marketing, or is this a way to really differentiate a new way of investing, a new way of active passive? Can we just dissect it a little more?
Yeah, sure. So if you think about how WisdomTree started, we had the observation, this goes back to, you mentioned my work with Professor Siegel. He wrote Stocks for Longer in 1994, himself was a Vanguard investor from 1975. He studied under Paul Samuelson at MIT, and Samuelson helped Bogle construct the first index fund. So he was a Vanguard long client for 40 years, still is a longtime client. But in 1999 and 2000, as he was writing about the markets with Stocks for Long Run, he would just say, buy Vanguard, buy the cheapest way you can own the market. He became very passionate that big cap tech stocks were a sucker's bet, that they were dramatically overvalued. They had 9 stocks, triple digit PEs, and so you can never justify these valuations. And he was starting to say, well, what am I actually suggesting? A third of my portfolio is in stocks that I call a sucker's bet. That's not really cap weighting. It's something else. And so that's where he started working on the future for investors that I helped him write. That was, how do you protect from bubbles and how do you rebalance back to measures of value? It's very valuation centric. And so it was this belief that cap weighting, which is done very, very well, but it has these drawbacks of overweighting the most overvalued, never rebalances and sells and never buys when things get cheap. And so that's what this, at least what WisdomTree's originally fundamentally weighted index process was designed to do, was introduce a value and quality discipline towards rebalancing on value. And we've been doing it for 12 years. The performance has been fantastic on our original funds. We have 5 to 6 funds that are in their top decile of all active and passive. So beating our mid-cap funds, in the mid-cap value space, beating 98% of their peers, mid-cap core beating close to 100% of their peers, similar in small caps. I mean, these are good numbers in what's been one of the tougher parts of the market. People say U.S., it's efficient, we'll just use beta. We're showing you don't need to just use beta. You could use these modern alpha approaches to do it. And some of the performance gets even better when you go into more inefficient markets where people think they need active, and just having a rules-based process to protect from where people go wrong when they buy more speculative, unprofitable, junkier type stocks. You could do that with a rules-based discipline like we are. Now, everything we started off as in equities 12 years ago was index-based. Increasingly, we're actually trying to construct it a little bit more actively. And some of our latest funds are active funds that have a qualitative discipline on top of the index. But that does go back to, again, why we call it modern alpha. It's trying to add value on top of beta.
I love it. I love it. And another term that you mentioned, value added. I mean, some serious value add over just straight beta. That was a good segue into another topic. Industry factors. Could you talk a little more about, you know, the factor base or some of these industry factors that are commonly used?
Sure. You know, we started off, and I described as rebalancing back to relative value, and whereas the market just kept waiting, and that's the market. We were having both a value discipline. If you look at some of the original factor work was promoted by Fama French. They're two of the academics, Eugene Fama, Ken French. And they have what they originally called the Fama French three-factor model. That said, a portfolio's returns can be explained by its exposure to the market, the beta, its size, so small caps, and value. And so people started looking at as factors as your size tilt and your value tilt. That three-factor model has been expanded to things like quality, which is, if you say who's promoted quality the most, I'd say Ben Graham, Warren Buffett. Buffett has talked a lot about buying, he'd rather pay a fair price for quality merchandise than buying a bargain basement cheap stock, what he calls the cigar butts of value. Like, he'd rather pay a good price for high quality companies. And he describes that every year in his acquisition criteria in his annual letters. He says, I like to buy companies with high return on equity and no debt. And that's the return on equity is your measure of marginal reinvestment in your business, how much profits it generates. And the Fama French three-factor model now has five factors. They have something called robust minus weak. This quality tilt is one of their new five factors in their five-factor model. So quality is getting a lot of favor. And momentum is another one studied in the academic literature, saying things that have tended to work continue to work. And so that's one of those sort of ironies between value works and momentum works. You would say they're on sort of the opposite sides of each other. But there's some research on how all those are some of the most common factors that are coming up in people's models. And the other one you'd say, if you have value, you have quality, momentum, size, you're hearing a lot about low volatility, and that's partly what everybody wants. Everybody, you know, that you'd say a lot of the client base is getting older, they're entering retirement, they want income and they want low volatility. And so as a factor, you see a lot of work around how do we minimize the volatility of an equity strategy. And WisdomTree created, you know, where we started off with this value approach, we recently launched a multi-factor that is designed to add active risk, so high active share, 85% active differences versus the market, so really an active product, but it's getting you multiple factors. So of these factors I just talked about, it has a value tilt, it has a quality tilt, it has momentum, it has a low volatility element, and it's done, you know, sector neutral. So this is sort of our cutting edge of both going after high active modern alpha, but with a factor-based approach that's multiple factors.
Okay, there's a lot there. I want to just follow up with one question, or follow-up question is that, so you have this multi-factor approach. Does that help with lowering correlation? Does it have nothing to do with correlation? Talk to me a little about that.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned low correlation. That is one of, I glossed over that quickly. I said one of the factors is low volatility. We actually have a low correlation factor in the product construct that we are also, one of the ways we get lower volatility is by selecting stocks that are less correlated to the market and using that as one of our factors. But the basic, you know, we have a U.S. multi-factor, now an international multi-factor, and an emerging markets multi-factor. They all have approximately 200 stocks in their baskets. When we tilt towards our factor weighting, we have both a factor weighting and a risk weighting. The tilts Are away from market cap. So I actually like to compare it versus an equally weighted S&P 500. You know, that tends to tilt you a little bit down in size away from the pure mega caps. And so that in some ways gets you lower correlations to the broad market, but it is going to still, if the markets are up, this is generally going to be up. It's not going to, you know, if the markets are up, it's generally not going to be down, most likely. It's going to have generally high correlations, but we do believe it will add value. It's one of our higher in our research. It's added 400 to 500 basis points of, we think, potential for performance on top of a traditional index. And we just did a blog post on this last week. In real time, it's been out there for 15 months. We benchmarked to that equal weighted S&P 500, and we've added 700 basis points over the equal weighted S&P 500 in the real time track record. So it's an interesting start, but it's also a very good start.
Well, that's some serious or real alpha aside from modern alpha, some fabulous performance. That actually dovetails into the next question of, you know, the whole active versus passive or passive versus passive. It really seems that WisdomTree is it fair to say, is a little more active now versus passive?
Yeah, I mean, I think this was one of the questions we even struggled with as we started. Are we active or are we passive? And I think you see where we're branding it with Modern Alpha, that we do believe it is much more active. The goal is to outperform the market. So you could say this is a new way of doing active versus it's a new way of doing passive. But it does have passive elements. It is rules-based. It does have regular rebalancing. Now, my latest executions are actually doing it in traditional active format, so I have more flexibility, more qualitative judgments, and so that is getting true active. But even our original pure index rebalancing once a year to dividend streams and earning streams, you know, those are beating 98% of their active peers. So it's right in there with the active mindset and goals, but it's just doing it with the ETF structure, which is associated with passive, and it's doing it with an index. So it's also, it is very much rules based, but the rules are designed to try to beat the traditional indexes.
Right. So what about some of your larger competitors then? Some of these larger ETF sponsors, without naming names, there's some big three out there. Are they following your path? Y'all are definitely, you know, trailblazing and leading the pack here. What about the industry? Are some of the larger ETF sponsors, you know, following you all with Modern Alpha, these factor-based products?
I think one of the things that made us unique at the start was we pioneered the affiliated indexing model. What I mean by affiliated or self-indexing was, you know, the traditional big three, as you talk about, iShares, State Street, Vanguard, they would go to S&P, Russell, and MSCI and license their intellectual property, the index provider's intellectual property, to create an ETF. When we started, there was no innovation indexing. There was 300 ETFs. They were all market cap weighted. There was nothing really unique. We helped push the industry forward to say, hey, you can add value and add innovation. We launched 20 funds in one day in June of 06 and own the indexes, own the IP. And that helped unleash a wave of innovation across the industry. Now, I'd still say most of the big players are still licensing third-party MSCI, S&P, and Russell indexes, when I'd say, don't you think they have investment teams that can construct their own rules? And they probably do, but they have not made that shift as much as we have been pushing. But you also see where we're pushing. We're pushing more into that active space. And so, over time, I do think it's just another way of executing an active approach. And I do think that there's strong teams at all those big firms that doesn't need the third party. So I think you're going to see all that come together over time.
Very interesting. Thank you. Let's pull back for a couple minutes with your macro lens of the industry. I believe this discussion and or argument has been going on for a while of the mutual funds versus ETFs. Could you talk a little about flows and the growth and the adoption or usage of ETFs across the market?
Yeah, so for the last 12 years since we've been in business, there's been a steady drumbeat or trickling out from the traditional active fund structure, and ETFs have been steadily growing, or you could say in some ways rocket ship growing higher, for equities. Now, fixed income is where the active managers still have their foothold on the industry, and you could say part of that's the 401k, part of it's that they just believe that the active fixed income managers have been good and they haven't felt a need for the fixed income ETFs. Now, we believe we're pushing the envelope there, and just as we did with equities and reweighting back to income, we're doing the same thing for the aggregate with a yield-enhanced aggregate priced at 12 basis points. That's beating 90% of the active community, like the name brand PIMCOs and Double Lines that everybody loves. We're right there with them. And so I think we're taking the fight to fixed income too. So that's just getting started, is the fixed income part of the market. But I would say generally, and this is where you get, you know, really interesting conversation. Why are ETFs structurally, if you're going to do active or passive, why do we think the ETF is part of the modern alpha story? Is we have some of these new active funds, they have 40% turnover every quarter. Now, if you were to do that in a separate account or a fund, you're likely to have large capital gains over time. We have funds that have had 40% turnover every year that are up more than double since they launched. So there's not like these funds are at losses. They've never paid a capital gain. And that's because of the ETF structure and how you can do rebalancing with ETFs. And so just that ETF wrapper being able to manage taxes better tells you that all the funds eventually are going to become available as ETFs. Now, the active have been resistant because they believe they have a secret sauce that they want to cloak from the world. And the ETFs, we are fully transparent. You can see our holdings every day. So if you believe you have some quote-unquote secret sauce, you're very resistant. But we are bringing transparency, and we believe you can do it in ETFs. And just over time, the taxes are going to matter. And that's one of the reasons why we think that flows are going to continue towards ETFs over time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you mentioned something briefly about the whole defined contribution or 401k marketplace. I have to believe that's a wide open or green field as more 401ks, or whether it's in brokerage accounts, not to get in the weeds here, start allowing or adopting, you know, ETF allocations. Any comment there?
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting, we tried over a decade ago to establish our own 401k platform, and it's really hard to get people to switch platforms. We've been using our own ETFs and our own 401ks really for the last decade. So it's possible. It's been able to be done. The question is there incentive for the platforms and the record keepers to make them available, given, you know, their historical businesses? There's, you know, the truth is innovation is happening in ETFs. So if you want access to things like WisdomTree, largely it's had to be in ETFs. Now we are doing more things. You know, our firm is doing more in the collective trust world, so we can get funds available on platforms. But the one of the main benefits that we talked about is the tax efficiency. And you could say in 401ks, you don't have that same tax element. People don't care about intraday trading in 401ks. So ETFs are great, largely from the innovation they bring. But I would say, you know, some of their advantages versus the fund structures are a little bit less apparent when it comes to 401ks. But really everywhere else, we'd say, you know, that structure is a big competitive advantage.
Got it. Thank you. You know, one more topic, on the macro side of things. Can you talk a little about the misconception of ETF illiquidity, specifically maybe with some of the WisdomTree funds?
So where we're going, you think, how does WisdomTree play in for the long run? We're trying to reduce frictions, and how do you get access to towards our ETFs? And, you know, the different platforms that are out there, we are trying to make it easier, execute at no transaction fees. And that is one obstacle. People don't like paying those transaction fees. And so if you can have partnerships with these major firms that offer them commission-free, we do believe that will help appeal to a broader audience. It is one of the things we're seeing a lot of growth from within our product lineup, and just helping generate more trading volume. And that then helps generate a self-fulfilling liquidity loop, and people then can see using it more. So we're very excited to be partnering with these different firms to help to aid that process.
Yeah. And that actually dovetails into another topic of what the industry is calling NTF ETFs. So creating models on these platforms to make it very easy and cost effective for advisors, maybe even broker dealers and retail investors to use. Could you talk a little about that?
Yeah, we're one of the things, you know, if you'd say our first 10 to 12 years were about building great products, something that I've been overseeing for the last 12 years. The next 12 years will be about how do we become better partners to our clients? How do we provide solutions, a full set of solutions to people? And one of those set of solutions is model portfolios. And my team oversees asset allocation, and we are building robust open architecture models. We're not a BlackRock with 2/3 market share. We could be very open architecture and help provide unique solutions there. So we do believe the combination of no transaction fee ETFs with no fee models in provided for my asset allocation team will be a very useful way to help partner with advisors over time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Full disclosure, ACG Wealth is a big fan of your models on a couple of these platforms. And you mentioned early on in our discussion the value add. We believe it's a true value add for the end client. Access to rebalancing and models and at a very reasonable, if not cheap, cost. So nicely done.
We're excited to be working with you on all those projects.
Yes, wonderful. Along those lines, I'd love to get your thoughts on this whole online digital or what the industry is calling robo move. Can you talk a little about moving the investment advisory business online?
Certainly, I think everybody can see the trends personally in your home. My parents, the baby boomer generation, they're accessing things on their mobile phones. They're on the computers. They're not as tech savvy as the teenagers, but they want to see information at their fingertips just like everybody else. And so, to be called a robo advisor, and you have a few of these that are appealing to the younger generations, it's just going to be part of everybody's offering. Everybody must have a good online presence, and everybody must have a good way of managing their portfolios and accounts. My generation would rather not talk to people. They'd rather just see the things on their phone and then email and text and get the questions. So there is more that's happening online. But I believe, everybody must have, it's just a part of the offering of how you service clients. And I know you guys are making a lot of steps there. And I think that's, you're exactly right on all the efforts that you're making.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You bring up a great point, and I think we all do this, whether around the dinner table or on the holidays, and you look at the demographics of the boomers, the Gen Xers, and the Gen Ys. How will all these investors, future investors, want to use us and access us? Changing trends.
Yep.
That brings us to the end of our podcast. Any parting comments, Jeremy, that we haven't covered?
No, I think we hit on everything that WisdomTree's focused on, talking about how we're trying to add value through ETFs, our modern alpha approach. We talked about the model portfolio business and trying to help people get solutions, open architecture solutions, from the broad industry with our great thought leadership and asset allocation team, and all packaging it with technology and building out more technology tools and information. We have a great blog that I help contribute to every day. If you want more leadership, thought leadership on what's happening in the markets and various ETFs, we're writing every day at wisdomtree.com and the blog there. So, but thank you for having us on the podcast, and thanks for being interested in the different approach that WisdomTree offers.
That's fabulous. Thank you. Everyone, you heard it first. Definitely a pioneer on the subject. Jeremy Schwartz, Director of Research at WisdomTree. Thank you very much for attending the podcast, Jeremy, and we look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.